that type of mental training, just standing and looking up at a big hill and not feeling that this is an obstacle. I'm not, you have to mentally prepare that it's going to be a good and nice hill run, but still it's going to be tough.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I am Chip.
And I'm Chris, and welcome to episode 29 of the show. Pretty exciting. On the show today, we have Johan Carlson. He's a super experienced swim runner. He's a trail runner, mountain biker. He's basically as pro as you can get. Member of Team Simployer with his partner, Joachim. He's won Engadin last year. So we had him on the show to talk about Engadin, talk about swim run, talk about mental toughness. It was a really interesting interview, and we'll talk more about that later.
Yes. First, into the training updates. We, Chris and I, inspired by our Otolo course preview episode, we took Nicholas Ramirez, Envol Coaching's 3-hour Engadin hill prep, hill repeat, badass swim run, hang on to your shorts workout, and yeah, we did it. We gone and done it. So we can unpack that a little bit. So it was 30 minutes hill repeat into a 20-minute swim at race pace, then a 25-minute hill repeat into a 15-minute, then a 20-minute hill repeat into a 10-minute swim, then another 30, right into a 30-minute hill repeat into a 15-minute swim, and then 15-minute hill repeat to finish.
Yeah, it was for 3 hours. It was really sporty. I mean, I was definitely trying to go for it. Yeah. I was kind of fading at the end, I think, like everybody.
I think everyone.
But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's really gives you a sense of what it takes to be prepared for some of these races. And it was fun. I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, it was fun. And we went up Hyde Street, H-Y-D-E, in San Francisco. If you're familiar with the area, it is one of the steepest streets in San Francisco, and it's where the cable cars go up. And then one, we actually went down Lombard Street, you know, the crookedest street in the world, which actually isn't the crookedest street, but it's just a thing that apparently
Yeah, that was fun to kind of finish going
so
down
that was
that
cool. The water was good. There was a ton of people at Aquatic Park, probably like 100 swimmers. There was some event going.
I don't know if it was 100.
There was 100.
Might as well have been of 100. Yeah, okay. We were definitely dodging swimmers. But yeah, it was cool. We had a couple friends come out. So Ray, who we shouted out last week for coming out to his first swim run, he agreed to come back for more and did the whole 3 hours. I thought he was going to cash out. And then when he told me he was thinking about cashing out, I'm like, dude, you only got like 40 minutes left. You might as well stay for the whole thing.
And then he charges up the hills like no problem.
Yeah.
So Ray and our friend Sandrine,
right,
both did this workout with us. So we are going to give, since we can't give the feats of endurance to ourselves, we're going to give it to our friends that came with us. No, but Sandrine and Ray, it was a really badass workout, and we were super, everyone was so stoked when we finished just because of how cool of a workout it was. So we're going to award them to the feats of endurance this week.
Yeah, and then as far as for our regular shout out, mm-hmm, we basically wanted to shout out every single person that's going to be racing at Otola Engadin this weekend. So stoked for everyone. Super stoked for everyone. Enjoy mm-hmm it. Have a great time. Say hi to the cows for us. Enjoy the cheese at the aid stations.
We're just making up all this aid station food. If you do take a selfie or something with a cow, be safe, but also tag us on Instagram.
Please tag us.
The Low Tide Boys with a Z. So just a few bits of housekeeping notes. We have our latest triathlete column is up, and it's all about the tether. So we shared some stories that our listeners shared with us about funny tether experiences and our suggestions around the tether. We also have if you haven't caught it, our bonus episode, Gear Review with the Swim Run Labs, Annie and Brooke. We reviewed the entire line of Orca wetsuits. So Chris has tried a couple, Brooke has tried a couple, so Annie and myself, we kind of interviewed them and we went through their entire line and gave some recommendations and some general thoughts on wetsuits in general, as well as the Orca lineup. So if you're in the market for a wetsuit, check that one out.
Yeah. And then we're working on a new segment that we're just going to introduce to everyone now, that it's kind of like deep thoughts swim run deep thoughts, or we got the idea from, if you're in the Bay Area and you listen to Giants radio before the games, it would be this Kruk and Kipe on baseball where they would just pick a topic and talk about it. And one thing I've been thinking about a lot that I wanted to just kind of put out there is, as we've been, you know, recording the show, we've been learning a lot more about swim run. And I feel like we've had some guests that have really given us some insight into kind of what it really takes to be, to excel at the sport. Mm-hmm. I think chatting with Desiree, Johan on the episode you're going to, on the interview you're going to hear today, I think really, you know, put out some gems as to kind of just like what it takes, you know, like the commitment it takes, the technique that it takes. Same thing talking to Nicholas, even doing this 3-hour workout that we did on Saturday. I think like it's helping me sort of understand kind of like, well,
to bring it to the next level.
Yeah, what it takes to bring it to the next level. What are the things that you really need to focus on as a swim runner, which is, you know, the mental game for sure, being a super strong swimmer, understanding and training specific courses. I think all these things, which kind of seem obvious, but as we're hearing the guests kind of lay out those little pearls of wisdom, I mean, to me, it's been really enlightening, and I feel like I'm a stronger swim runner, even if I can't race, because there's no races in the U.S. right now because of it. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it's been an interesting byproduct of the show, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will echo a lot of those same things, that when we're talking to these people that have been doing it for 5 and 6 and 8 years, what they're talking about, I'm taking nuggets from those, and I'm applying it to my own kind of training. And this episode with Johan in particular, I have really was inspired by it, and I completely flipped my training, like kind of on its head, or my approach to training. I didn't necessarily change anything, but just how my outlook was. Or Johan mentioned something here about every workout has a particular focus. So I thought that was really smart. So when we've been doing these swim run workouts, I have been like, okay, I'm going to focus on charging into transitions and not being so concerned about the water. You know, you're not focusing on 10 things, you're focusing on 1 to 2. And if your focus is swimming at race pace during the swims, then you're going to take the runs a little more chill. But it's a really an interesting thing, like what Chris said about, if you're trying to get better and challenge yourself, you can. There's a lot of nuggets to kind of suss out of these different conversations that we're having. And I've been finding them valuable, just for myself, and as Chris has as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think with that, why don't we just transition right into the Johan Carlson interview. So as we mentioned before, he's a super experienced swim runner. He's based in Stockholm. We met him earlier this year in Catalina. Mm-hmm. And was like a super cool guy. We met him at the wine and cheese thing that we crashed before the race. He came in second at that race with his girlfriend and a stout swim runner in her own right, Helena. And he's raced pretty much every single Atala event, including winning Engadin last year. So we talked about that on the show, what that was like, basically redlining the whole way, and how it took him 3 years to be able to like hold that red line until they got to the finish line. So it was a really interesting interview. We covered a lot of stuff. And like Chipper mentioned, you know, there's a lot of pearls that he laid out, and, you know, he was training. Anyway, we won't spoil it.
Yeah.
He was doing a lot of training, but he was also training his mind to be sort of mentally prepared for these events, which I thought was really interesting. And I think you'll find it interesting as well.
You will. So enjoy.
Enjoy. All right. With us today, we have Johan Carlson. A super experienced swim runner out of Sweden, and we met him in Catalina earlier this year, or what seems like 50 years ago. Welcome to the show, Johan.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate being here. It's an honor.
Yeah,
we're honored. Yes, we are honored.
Yeah, we're the ones that are honored. So I distinctly remember when we met you at Catalina. It was at the wine and cheese event that was happening a couple days before the race that Chipper and I crashed because we didn't think we had to get on the guest list that we found out there was one. We're just chatting. You came up and sort of introduced yourself and said that you enjoyed the show. We were just like, oh, man, that's so awesome. And then Christopher Sundberg came up, is like, oh, you know who that is? And we're like, no idea. He's like, oh, he's like one of the best swim runners in the world. He's like super experienced. So we were like, okay. It's like, oh, we should probably have him on the show at some point. So I'm really happy that you're here. And I think before we talk about swim run and go into some stories and things like that, I kind of wanted to get a sense, just learn from you kind of what's your background, your athletic background. Where'd you grow up? What sports did you grow up playing? And sort of how did you find swim run later in life?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the southern part of Stockholm, in the archipelago. It's a community that's pretty close to the ocean. But still, as a Swede, I started up with ice hockey. And that's was my primary sport that I did was as a young kid. But then after high school and all that, I joined the military and stopped playing hockey and went into, I was actually a mine clearance diver. So and worked like 10 years in that branch. And during that period, I started doing naval pentathlon, and then it more and more went into to swimming and running. As to actually at that point separate interests that I had. And then after a while I most enjoyed the trail running, actually, and I mean the flat running was not for me or the on the course, so more in the woods and on the trails. And that led to meeting up with Joakim in a local running club back home, and we started talking about swim run, and pretty early we were hooked onto it. In the early days, so we started doing that for fun, actually, and that the one thing led to another. We went more and more semi professionals, and then yeah, got really hooked on it.
You mentioned pronounced Joakim.
Yeah, that's my teammate.
And so that's from like Team Simployer, which is sort of your main team. You've had multiple partners. I know you race Catalina with Helen. So when you guys sort of teamed up and you're like, oh, let's get a little bit more serious, kind of what was going through your mind? Like, you were having success, you were winning races, or was it just like, oh, we're really enjoying this, like, let's see how far we can take it?
So it all actually started with the adventurous part of it, just enjoying the movement in the archipelago and over the islands and all that. But after a while, Joakim, who I started training a lot with, was he had done Ötelö, the big one, mm-hmm. actually pretty early days, and he said that maybe we should give it a go and see how good we can be. So that's the development from going to just for fun to do it a little bit more serious was a natural desire to see how good we could be if we did it a little bit more serious than we had done prior. But from the beginning, it was just a adventure and for fun.
Nice. I feel that's a lot of people's kind of endurance journey. A little bit. You started off, whether it's you're running a local 5K or running on some trails or something, and then it kind of, for certain people, you kind of unlock that curiosity about yourself, about what if I tried to be really good about this or did a race or did some other kind of the next challenge up, and that sounds like that's what definitely got you hooked.
Yeah. And from the beginning, actually, we didn't have the big results. We were doing the races just for fun, being top 10 and maybe or aiming to be top 10 and, uh-huh. and doing it for, we didn't have actually any grasps of the top podium positions in the beginning. But we still we just enjoyed it. And I think one part of it, both for me and Joakim, was to the community in swimrun was so familiar, and we really enjoyed hanging out with all the friends. And during the years, we started getting more and more friends, mm-hmm. both nationally in Sweden, but also international. To meet them on the races was fun One part of the was to meet all the friends and just have a blast.
You know, we've heard that before, which is interesting, and we definitely felt that when we were in Catalina. It was sort of the first time kind of being on that stage, and we already had the podcast going, and everyone was so friendly and welcoming, and it was really great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I mean, you guys put another part of it is all the laughing on social media. So that's awesome. I love it.
Thanks for that. So we just mentioned Catalina. That was earlier this year in February, March. Again, Chris says, I think that does feel about that. That was 5 years ago. But
yeah.
Anyway, you have done almost all the races on the Otello circuit with the exception of Malta, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And so you've done a lot of European racing, and then that was the first Otello's first race in the States. I would be really curious on your take on Catalina and how you felt that it went for Otello's U.S. Debut.
Oh, I really, really enjoyed it. And for me, I decided really early when I heard that the race was on, and I heard some rumors before the official setting that there was a race going to be set up in the U.S. So I was so to say on the computer the day it was released, and just got my spots. And unfortunately, my partner Joachim couldn't go, so I teamed up with the really, really good girlfriend I have, Helena, and we decided to go for a semi vacation also in US. So it was really good, and the race was awesome. I really enjoyed the scenery, and the island of Catalina was beautiful. And yeah, you got Los Angeles, and then also you have Catalina outside. That's a unique place. So I really enjoyed that. It was a tough race, though. But
it was tough. Nice. On I think because you're so experienced, you can probably calibrate how tough it was. Like, considering, you know, we're going to talk about Engadin in a little bit, but that race to us seems super tough too. On sort of the scale of 1 to 10, like from your experience, how tough do you think Catalina was?
I get that question pretty often. Which one is the toughest, the hardest one, and all of that? And it's actually pretty difficult to answer that, because for me, in the last couple of years now, I've gone almost all out on every race, and it doesn't actually matter if it's a flat race in Germany, or it's a hilly race in Switzerland, Engadin, or hilly race as in Catalina with long cold swims. All of them are really, really tough. But on a scale, I would say, because of the hills and the long swims, this is one of the toughest, together with Switzerland, Engadin. But I mean, Utö is also tough. In Sweden, it's pretty technical running. Mm-hmm. So they all have their challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that we really like about it, is every course is unique. You really need to train for the specific event. And with that, so did you do anything specific in your sort of build for Catalina? Like, did you just work extra hills or do extra long swim sets? How did you sort of tackle preparing for that race?
Yeah, if I'd known how hilly it would have been, I would have done more hill training. But I did some hill repeats, of course, but not as much as I probably should have if I was aiming for a men's podium position. Mm-hmm. But still, I did some focus on longer swim sessions, did a little bit more swimming than usually prior to the race because of its long swimming distances. But still, I think I had a pretty normal setup before a normal race.
You're a veteran swim runner for sure. So I'm curious to like dive a little bit into your sort of training methodology, I guess. So you sort of have a consistent block of swim runs, swim and then run different training. And then based on the course, you kind of will index a little bit higher on certain ones that you feel would warrant yeah. that. Is that kind of how you have it set up?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So normally I have my normal schedule during a week, but it's during a longer period, it's built into blocks, different block periods, and of course, as you said, I look at the race that I have prior to or the next race in hand, and then specialize the training for that race. If it's a hilly race, like in Engadin, we do pretty much more hill repeats than we normally do. And of course, if it's a really technical running race as Ute is, we do some extra fast technical running in the really technical parts of the trails. And then so you actually adapt a little bit against the specific competition, of course. But other than that, I try to keep during this period of the year anyway the swim run sessions coming, and also adapting those to specific. So when I go out on a swim run training, so to say, you have this session is about speedy transitions. All the other things is just to relax, and then I train speedy transitions, go fast into a transition, go fast out of a transition, and then maybe relax in between. Or it's about quick running, and then I take a little bit more slower on the swimmings just to be able to run really hard. Or the opposite, swim really hard, run a little bit more relaxed, and then mix it up a little bit.
Wow, I really like that. So each swim run, specific swim run sort of training session, you have a really focused area that you're trying to be perfect on almost. Is that, you know, if it's transitions on being fast in and out of the water, you know, you're still swimming, but it's kind of, you're just getting meters on your shoulders. You're not necessarily doing certain intervals or race pace or anything, but you have that one focus area that you're like making sure that you really nail for that session. I really love that. That's a great tip.
And then of course I have those just be out doing swim run for 3 hours sessions as well. And then the aim for that session is to be out doing swim run in 3 hours. But that doesn't necessarily need to be any specific pace or just go a long time in the swim run suit. But I try to have a focus area on each session.
Can you break down for us what a typical training week looks like for you? Like how many days are you swimming? How many days are you running? All that.
The swim running.
Yeah, a little bit depends. Now I'm actually in. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I had this year is a little bit it's strange because we don't have any specific races to actually prepare for. And also me and Joachim has actually taken a year a little bit off. That's why he didn't go to Catalina. So he said that that this year is going to be more relaxed, not that many races. And that actually affected me as well to let's do this year as a little bit more relaxed year and not have the high end aims or goals for this year and maybe restart it for 2021 instead. So this was actually just to capture or get the motivation back, and all that was for him was a part, and also became a part for me to be able to stay on a high, let's say,
high functioning
training amount. Because last year I did the one slow week or a low week for me last year was about 10 hours of training. And the most weeks was up to 20, 22 hours of training last year. So that was a hard week. And the relaxed week was about 8 to 10 hours. And that's, if you do that for 365 days a year, that's affects.
You need a break.
Yeah, you needed a break.
I mean, that's definitely like, that's like a professional, like professional triathlete.
Like a pro athlete. Yeah.
That's about how much they train.
Yeah, and also have to get, I mean, we work full time, so we don't have we have to actually, those hard weeks, you don't do anything else. You just train, sleep, eat, and work.
Yeah, you're not going to any parties or any meetups or anything. You're only training and working and eating and sleeping.
More of that this year, though.
Yeah. How often, of all these sessions, like how many would you do with your partner?
So we try to do as much as possible. Actually, we live about 200 meters apart from each other. But still, we don't train that much together. That's strange. But we try to do like 1-2 sessions a week, maybe during a normal year. This year is lot less.
Gotcha.
Maybe every other week we get together and do a session together. But as I said, this year it's much more relaxed. I try to do some other type of training, do some mountain bike riding and actually doing some enduro motocross riding as well. And running, of course, swimming still, and do a lot of swim runs still, but not as much as I did last year.
Yeah. Before we talk about Engadin, do you have any really funny sort of race stories, like things that happen or things that you've seen that you want to share?
Yeah. Engadin last year was a funny story when we... last year we won, but the year prior to that we had a pretty high setting for that race as well. So we was really keen on doing a good result, and we decided to go. That was actually our second time there, and we said that okay, this is our race. Let's do as good as we can, and we went out really, really hard.
Too hard.
And we actually, too hard. And it's easy to do that. We did that two times, and the third time we actually managed. But the second time, I just hit the wall, and we fought so hard for 5.5 hours. I think we did like 5 hours 40 minutes that time.
Jeez.
It was super tough, and we actually went in and just crossed the finish line, and just after us, two guys, Rasmus and Simon Börjesson, just came over the finish line singing and having a blast. And we asked them, how the hell can you go be so fast? And they actually said, no, we decided to quit. We sat down, had a beer, chatted for a while, and then they actually arrived like 10 minutes after us. So it was like, holy shit, how did you manage to do that? That's a good story in swimrun. Just quit the race, half race, sat down, had a beer, decided to follow up and still do it, and finished like top 10. That's crazy.
That's amazing.
Wow.
And also the foresight to just keeping some euros in your kit in case you do need that beer so you could pay for it.
I think they actually got it for free though.
Yeah. Hey, sorry, I don't have my wallet on me. I don't know if you can tell.
Exactly.
I have a compass and a whistle if you're interested to trade. That's pretty hilarious. I love that story. Yeah, Engadin, since we're on the subject, is coming here in the next couple weeks. And we did a pretty in-depth course preview about that one. And from what we can gather, we haven't done it, but you're either going up or you're going down. on the run.
Pretty much.
That must be pretty hard to, it sounds like it took a couple times to really learn your lesson on pacing some of those hills, because you just blow your heart rate out of the water right away.
It starts with a pretty slow incline going up for like 2.5-3 kilometers, 3,000 meters. And then That actually just drains your muscles. And then you go into the water, swim for like 240 meters or something over a lake. And then you continue up, up, up. And then of that incline is just in the first 5Ks, you're gonna, that's where the race decides if you're gonna be able to perform later on or not. But yeah, you need some adaptation to that race for sure. Not the uphill running, the downhill running, I would say, is the most important.
That was even a consideration in Catalina that a lot of people hadn't considered, that on the first big steep up and down, the downhill is pretty steep as well, especially if you're not used to that kind of terrain. And you can either destroy your quads on the way down, or you know, it is, if you don't know how to take it right, it could definitely be something you got to be really careful with.
Yeah, for sure. So we learned the lesson, as you said. First two times we went out too hard and we wasn't enough prepared for that type of running. And so the third year, when we decided to do a full commitment to that race, we thought that we actually went to Austria for 7 days of hill running or swim run training or adventure in the mountains, just to be able to train long running out, downhill running sessions. So we went up really high, 4,000 meters top, and then just went downhill running for 1 hour in a row, just to be able to break the legs enough to be fit enough to do...
get them used to that sort of abuse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense, because it's not just that it's steep downhill running, but you mentioned how technical it is. It's pretty dangerous. I mean, you know, similar races that happen in Switzerland, like UTMB, like they make people use poles because they're worried about people falling and breaking something. So, So I'm curious, when you're doing these long focused trainings for something like Engadin, obviously it helps that you've done the course before, so you have a sense of it. But when you mentioned that you're trying to sort of break your legs down, is it really because you just want to make sure that you have quadriceps left for sort of the end of the race? Or is it more like you just really want to get the technique down so you stay really fast on your feet and just move quickly?
Yeah, it's actually both of them. It's important to break the muscles like 4 weeks prior to the race really, really hard. It's my opinion anyway, to be able to have the quads there. But still, in Engadin, if you can't be fast in your downhill running, you're not going to be able to perform on the top level. So you have to actually do both of them. You have to be really, really fast. And if you are tired in the muscles, you can't run fast in a technical downhill running. So both of the aims that you mentioned is important, I think.
So you mentioned at the beginning of Engadin that's really tough. Do you think that's the toughest part of the race, or are there any other legs that you think are particularly brutal and something that athletes that are going there should keep their eyes out for?
In my experience, the last loop, so you're going up or down all the race, but the last time you go up and last time you go down before the long
flats.
Exactly. Before that, the last uphill and downhill running is actually the toughest one, I think, because that's when you have drained yourself of all the energy, and you are in the times we have been there, it's pretty hot and it's midday and all that. But still, it's not. It's tough because it's late in the race, and it's also a very long downhill running. It's pretty technical uphill. It's not the steepest, but it's still, I think that is the something to have mentally prepared for anyway. It's going to be tough on everyone because it's so long into the race and it's a hard course overall. But if you're mentally strong there, you can do some good results.
I mean, so it's push. Pretty. I mean, it's pretty amazing just hearing you describe that and all the training that went into it. And then last year, you and Joakim won it. So what's that like? That everything, basically, all the training, everything paid off. I mean, what was that like crossing the finish line in first place?
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, the first time me and Joakim was on a podium was 2017, since then we always had it that on the map, so to say. We wanted to be better, and we wanted to fight for the win and be on the podium, and we worked hard for that for a couple of years, and then we decided to aim up for Engadin last year, and we didn't do as prior years we have done every race, but last year we actually reduced the number of races to be able to focus 100% on certain races. Mm-hmm. One of them was, of course, the World Championship, but one of them was Engadin. So we did that. We had that for a special goal during the season, and then we did the training in Austria, and then we went down to Engadin like 6 days prior to the race to acclimatize to the environment and the altitude and everything. So we were really, really set up for that. And then we saw Daniel and Lelle on the starting line, and it was like, holy shit, it's going to be a tough race. And we had actually said that we're going to take it slow and controlled for half of the race. Mm-hmm. But after 3Ks of running, Joakim decided that let's go, let's push for it. And we did. And we tried So we went in the lead after the first swim and then never stopped running or never looked back. Crossing that finish line was like a
relief.
It was a relief. And I didn't think, I mean, 10 minutes prior to crossing that finish line, I still wasn't sure of winning that race. That's how how pressed I was. I didn't feel certain on our result because we had Daniel and Lelle hunting us down, and we knew they are better swimmers. But still, we had a good day there. So it was a really, really good feeling.
You sound and you've mentioned this mental toughness. I mean, you sound like one of the most hardened people. From a mental standpoint, just the pretty grueling training sessions and your just kind of ability to sort of push beyond, when people's legs are burning and they feel like they're on fire. It doesn't sound like you take a hike break on the hills. It sounds like that's when you and Joakim really decide you need to turn it up and keep going.
Yep.
So do you work on that specifically, or is that just from years of kind of just pushing yourself to those limits?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually. I have that, of course, from all the years in the military, and on us, that's something that you train on there. But I think that's also one of my capabilities from when from that I always have had to be able to push beyond the pain, so to speak. But I also have trained it. I think, and I can't stress that enough, that I think that the mental part of training is as important as the physical training. For example, I go out doing swim run, or actually run and maybe a bath in really cold waters. I mean, when it's still almost ice on the water. I'm not doing that because I think it's nice or comfortable.
Doesn't feel good.
I do it to prepare myself for running and then jump into a cold water when I have to. So I'm not going to, my body is prepared for it, so to say. And I think that type of mental training, just standing and looking up at a big hill and not feeling that this is an obstacle. I'm not, you have to mentally prepare that it's going to be a good and nice hill run, but still it's going to be tough. But you have to train on those mental aspects as well.
Yeah, that's a pretty pretty powerful kind of mindset adjustment that the way you sort of lay that out. I'm having stark contrast in my own personal outlook on things. And then running up that Catalina Hill, I remember thinking, Mott, something sick about him that he has this pleasure about sending people up this crazy hill right away. So that was my outlook about, damn it, Mott. And then, but your outlook is like, okay, here's this little challenge that we're going to do and let's attack it. So I'm going to change my outlook next time.
I think that's something, if you train on that type of thinking, it's going to help you in the race later on. It's not going to be an obstacle. It's just going to be something you have to cross over. So yeah.
Do you do any meditation or anything like that to help your mental toughness at all, or to be able to kind of like silence out those, you know, your legs or your arms, whatever's hurting at the moment?
No, actually, no, I'm not. But like 10 years ago when I did, I competed in, or maybe 12, 15 years, time flies. But I competed in Naval Pentathlon. It was one of the events there is an obstacle course. It takes about 2 minutes to run it. And it's like your acid in the body is just skyrocketing during those 2 minutes. So you have these obstacles to manage, and on the start line of every race, I was so nervous. I was so actually during that period of time when I did I competed on an international level, and I had it was so high stress level that it actually drained me on energy before the race, before the start.
Yeah.
So I had to work on that. And I actually did quite a long, for 1 year, I did a really deep dive into the mental training and mental toughness training. And that really, really helped me conquering the stress and the fear of competing. So before a race nowadays, I'm more calm and I more rely on that I have done enough training in the background to be able to stand on this start line and do a good race. Other than standing on the start line and feeling stressed over that it's going to be a tough race or I'm going to hurt or have pain in my shoulders or legs. I'm just feeling calm, and it's going to be, it's nice to finally release all that energy that I've built up for a couple of months maybe.
Yeah.
So that's something that I learned a long time ago, and I don't need to actually, I just, that comes with me since I did that, but I have done it, and I kind of recommend doing that if you have that type of feelings prior to a race.
So I think that's a really good segue to something I wanted to ask you, which was, you know, we're living in the age of COVID. There's a lot of events that have been canceled, and hopefully the World Championship happens. It seems to me that sort of trying to keep a good mindset for training and for racing when everything seems so up in the air is really tough. What does the rest of your race schedule look like, and how are you dealing with sort of the possibilities that these races might not happen in your training?
So I've mentioned it prior that me and Joakim as a team decided to take it a little bit more slow this year. He maybe a little bit more than me. I still wanted to do the race or some of the races, and I decided to do it with my girlfriend Helena, who is a superwoman in swim run as well. But she actually found a even better partner than me. So she's gonna. Or she's preparing for the World Championship and with another girl, and me, I'm also preparing for it, but not on the level that I've been doing the last years. I'm doing this year as a little bit more slow, having trying to find or actually reload all the energy or motivation that I wanted to. I'm focusing more this year about adventures and having fun and doing the things that I maybe not missed out on, but still haven't had all the time or energy to do prior.
Because you're going too fast. You were really gonna have fun. You got to slow up and be in the back with us.
You got to hang with the low tie boys in the back.
Exactly. Taking your beer every now and then, that's good.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I really like that. It's not, I mean, you're kind of similar to how I'm sure in your training blocks, you know, you have 3 or 4 weeks on of really kind of intense training that's building, and then you have a week of recovery, you know, kind of a pretty classic build. It's the same thing with your whole season. And for season after season after season, it's really hard, especially at the level that you're performing at, to really be on top all the time and running on all those cylinders. And the way that you're approaching things is just more energy and more effort is being put towards everything. So it's probably more draining, and you need more recovery from a both a mental and a physical standpoint, it sounds like. And you're sort of returning to the magic of swim run and moving through nature and just having fun and enjoying the adventure.
Yeah. And I would want to stress that as well. Even during the hard last year, for example, when I had this hard schedule and had a coach and everything, and we did it was really a minute schedule when I had all every day scheduled for almost all the year. I still did. Amazing. I planned my adventures. So I said that, okay, every third week on Sunday, I'm going to have a swim run adventure. It's not defined what type of adventure, but I'm going to do a swim run and it's going to be adventurous. So I was like planning in my adventures. But nowadays I can do it a little bit more on if I want to, nowadays I would say this year I have said that I'm going to have a little bit more relaxed schedule. So not that planned. I still do a lot of training, but a little bit more what I feel of and want to do today also, and that type of schedule. And next year we're going to go for it again. And I can already feel all the energy and the motivation just building up for going into to a hard year and doing a lot of racing again.
Do you guys think you'll come back to Catalina next year?
I hope so. I really hope so. I want to go there again. I really enjoyed that race and all the trip was magical. So hopefully.
I guess one question that we like to ask people that are super experienced, because we're not, what is your favorite race and why? And if you say the world championship, I'm going to just take that as a little bit of a cop out.
Yeah.
But
besides the world championship, what's your favorite race?
What's my favorite race? I have a love-hate relationship to Engadin. I really, really hate running in hills, uphill and downhill, but the scenery of that race is so magical. You have these tops going all around you. And so I would say it's Engadin and it's also Ute in Swedish archipelago, because that's on my backyard. I live pretty close to Ute. And so those two races are equally the best ones in the Ötelö series.
Love it. Those two races are on our list at some point, assuming we'll ever be able to travel to Europe again.
Yeah, as soon as we're not banned.
So I guess, one thing that I think is what we love hearing other people's take on it is sort of like, what is it about swim run that sort of moves you, right? Like you spend all this energy, all this time, all this money to go to all these events. Like, what is it about the sport that you're so drawn to?
I think that the answer is you get that from every other swim runner as well. But I think that the feeling of going in nature and not being stopped by a shoreline. I can go outside my door here, run 100 meters down to the water, swim out to an island, go over that island, going to the next island, and so on and so forth. And that is something that's something that drives me. And I try to keep that also in my, as I said, tough schedule for training. Those years I had that, you have to have that type of adventurous feeling over it, even though it's a more or less elite training schedule. So I try to keep that in as a core.
Love that. So I'm hearing that there's no boundaries for you. You love how there's no boundaries. You just do whatever the hell you want to do on your training.
Pretty much.
Love it. Now, Mats mentioned this about Inkadin as well. I haven't heard you mention about any cows with bells. Is this something that you really enjoyed, the cows as well, or?
Yeah, you can get a ride.
Oh yeah, they probably can take the hills faster than we could.
Exactly. No, it's pretty magical running over through those areas where you have those standing, just thinging, thonging the bell under the neck there. But I don't know. It's for me. It's more the times I've been doing Engadin. All the three times I've gone on red from the get-go to the finish line. So it's the days prior to the race and maybe the day after the race that you actually enjoy the environment. During the race,
no time.
On that day, anyway, it's no time for me. I'm just focused, putting one foot in front of the other and just go as fast as I can.
You and Joachim are laser-focused on your goals.
It's been like that.
Wow. Well, you know what? I think this has been really, really interesting just to kind of hear, kind of get a good sense. Yeah. What's it like on the pointy end? Like, what does it really take? You know, we've had like Nicholas Ramirez on the show and other athletes, and you really get a sense of
the other level that they're on compared to.
Yeah. Just like what it really takes to excel in the sport and really just put in a great performance, because these courses are all really difficult.
Yeah, I just remembered one more fun story though
Let's hear it.
Yeah, first time we did the Ötulö World Championship, me and Joachim. We at that point we wasn't called Team's Employer. We were named Team Nynäshamns Ångbryggeri. That's actually a micro brewery for beer here in Nynäshamn.
Nice.
I'll remember that one.
Yeah, so we and that's actually the brewery who makes the Ötulö beer. So we were sponsored by them and had a goal set up for doing World Championship. And the brewery said to us, "That's nice, guys. You're gonna do top 10, and you have a free bar all evening when you reach the finish line."
Nice.
Yeah. So we were like really pumped up, talking about it for days, you know, prior to the race. Yeah, when we cross the finish line, we're going to do a real good party. We're going to invite every friend and just empty the bar. we ended up taking one beer after the race and just fell asleep.
Yep.
Could have predicted
a good
that.
One, actually. Yeah.
That's
a fun
story. Hilarious.
that's really good there. I love what a great story. And I think Chris and I had similar aspirations in Catalina, but we were also pretty exhausted, pretty pooped.
Tried to record our sort of race report, and it was so bad.
We were just exhausted. We're like, "What are we doing? Let's go to sleep."
like, what were we talking about? Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, Johan, we really appreciate your time and just your wealth of knowledge and outlook on things, I think is something that the listeners, and I know myself and Chris, are really thankful for, because that is something that we don't get a lot of insights to a lot of the time. So we really appreciate you sharing those things with us.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's nice talking to you guys.
yeah. And hopefully, you know, we'll do this again and we'll see you in Catalina next year. But until then, you know, happy training, enjoy it. And folks, what's the best place for people to find you? Just search for Team's Employer on Instagram. Is that a good way for people to follow what you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That's where we are.
Cool. Okay. Well, we'll link all that stuff in the show notes. But yeah, Johan, thanks again. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're so inclined.
You can also sign up for our newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at The Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, drop us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Writing Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of our swim run activities, hobbies, and other bullshit we do.
Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then run to the finish line and just keep going until you're done.
Yes. Or
until
run
you
to
cross the finish line.
Or run to the car.
Or run to your car.
Somewhere. Just keep running. Peace.